plans for my crazy day. My packed commute. All those unread emails in my inbox. But I'm getting stronger, faster, and pushing myself further every day. I don't care if I'm not like everyone else. This punching bag is the best way to end my day.
Fearless is knowing yoga isn't your style. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits at fepblue.org/getmore.
You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 271 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rolwin, coming to you live on a Monday evening in the aftermath of a third straight loss for the Atlanta Hawks by a final score of 104-93 in Miami. Not a big surprise that the Hawks lost this game. The Hawks were without, for those of you who might have missed this one, the Hawks were without Dennis Schroeder, Ursula Nevesova, and of course DeAndre Bembry and Miles Plumlee for this game. Schroeder was ruled out fairly early in the day on Monday with what an MRI revealed to be a sprained left ankle. Obviously, the severity there is kind of up for debate, but you know, Dennis, as we talked about on yesterday's podcast, told the media following the game on Sunday that he might be able to return this week. No indication as to whether that's actually going to be able to happen, but he was, of course, going to be out for this game in Miami. And as for Ursula Nevesova, he was ruled out early in the day on Monday with a left knee strain. That kind of popped up out of nowhere, so I'm not really sure the severity there. Obviously, it was not on the scene in Miami, so I'm not 100% sure that we'll have an eye on the injury report moving forward, and any further information on Ilyasova, but we'll keep an eye on that. But as for the game itself, you know, the Hawks were about 11 or 12 point underdogs in this game, and they lost by 11 points, which is basically what you would think would happen in that kind of game, and Las Vegas is pretty good at this for a reason. With that said, a couple of bright spots to at least hit on in this spot. John Collins was very, very good in 18 minutes, 14 points and 11 rebounds. Was actually dead even in plus minus in a game the Hawks lost by 11 points. I will say him only playing 18 minutes was a bit, surprising. I won't say it's surprising, but a little bit frustrating in some ways, because he was really one of the only points of consistent offensive production in this spot. You know, in the front court, which we'll talk about here later in the podcast, was not exactly overwhelmingly good in this game, aside from Collins. So, you know, I totally understand Bud's sort of stubbornness with not going to Collins late in games when it comes to his defensive effort, because he's not going to be as sound of a defender as Dwayne Dedmon, who played most of the fourth quarter in this spot. But at the same time, you know, Collins' offensive upside is such where they really could have used that down the stretch in a game they were trailing, especially without Dennis Schroeder in the lineup. They didn't really have that consistent production. And you know, if nothing else, Collins sort of collapses defenses and allows the Hawks to do a little bit of different things on the offensive end of the floor. But you know, in general, 18 minutes, you can't really ask for more than 14 points and 11 rebounds in that spot from a rookie big man. He was 6 of 11 from the floor. You know, Collins was pretty aggressive in getting shots up. You know, 11 attempts in 18 minutes is really a lot of attempts, but they were pretty much all of the efficient variety. He did have one sort of weird fadeaway attempt that he did, but he actually ended up getting fouled on it. So, you know, not the worst thing in the world to get to the line there. Made both free throws at the time, and yeah, there you go with John Collins. He played quite well in this game defensively. Same sort of story as we've been telling most of the season. There were highs and lows, but you know, in general, he played very, very well, and I continue to be very impressed with Collins versus where I thought he'd be at this point in the season. Especially when you're talking about all the tape that I watched in advance of the draft, I'm pretty surprised in a very, very good way just about how good he has been through his first four games as a professional. So we'll keep an eye on John Collins for sure as we move forward, because he's sort of the centerpiece that's worth discussing on a nightly basis. But elsewhere in this game, a couple more positive performances. I thought Torian Prince was good in general, 20 points, 7 rebounds, had 3 steals, did have 7 turnovers. There were a lot of lows for Torian, had some out-of-control stuff offensively, but in the same breath, you know, 37 minutes of play is actually, you know, higher than you'll definitely will usually see Bud go with a guy in this spot. But, you know, without Ilyasova to sort of cover up some things in the front court, without Schroeder to create offense, you know, there was a lot asked of Prince in this game, and I didn't think he was great, but the numbers were pretty good defensively. I've been a little bit frustrated with Prince so far this season. I will say that he's not been as consistently good on that, and as you would have to hope that he will be, because I continue to think that his defensive upside is higher than his offensive upside at this point in his career. But still, I thought Torian was good for the most part in the spot. You can't really ask for much more than 20 points out of him offensively and 7 rebounds and a very efficient 20 points on only 9 of 14 from the floor and 2 of 3 from beyond the 3-point line in this game. Kent Bazemore was the other big-time scorer in this spot. 20 points for Bazemore on 6 of 17 shooting. Got to the line for 10 attempts. It's been an encouraging theme for Bazemore getting to the line on a regular basis. That will help with his efficiency quite a bit, although 6 of 17 is not great by any stretch. But 20 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals for Kent in 31 minutes. He was asked to play a lot of point guard, especially in the fourth quarter. The Hawks went without a point guard on the floor for a while down the stretch, and Baze is not great in that role. We sort of railed against that, but in a game without Schroeder, it makes a little bit more sense. You know, Delaney, we'll get to, is not great in this game, and Isaiah Taylor, for all the stuff that he actually sort of added to the mix a little bit here in this game, you can understand why Bud wouldn't want to go with him down the stretch of a spot where he has not really practiced with the team. Josh Majette got a DNP, as well as Nick Brasino, both of whom were active in this game. I was a little bit surprised to not see Majette based on how much he's been playing for the Hawks in the early going, but Isaiah Taylor is much more of a prospect than Majette is at this point, and I actually saw some positives from Taylor, who we'll get to in a second, so I understood that. But back to Bazemore in this game, I thought he was just okay-ish. 20 points, you have to be pleased with that in some ways, but on 17 attempts, wasn't as if he was super efficient, and there were highs and lows with Baze, as there always are. There was some frustration, especially early on in the game, from the fan base on Bazemore, but he played better as the game wore on, and that's an encouraging sign in some ways. Let's talk about the starting front court a little bit here. Dwayne Dedmon and Mike Muscala both struggled, especially Dedmon. I thought in this game this was definitely his worst game of the season so far, both statistically and with the eye test. He went scoreless. He was 0-5 from the floor, 0-2 from 3 in 30 minutes, had 6 rebounds. I was talking to some people on and offline just about, this kind of goes back to Collins, but in a game where Dedmon was not playing well, not going back to Collins was even more frustrating, because it wasn't as if Dedmon was bringing a whole lot. Defensively, you don't see the numbers with that in the same way as you would offensively, and I think, at this point, he's still a much better defensive player than John Collins is. I'm not going to give you the highlights that Collins will as a shot blocker and sort of as a high-end rebounder, but Dedmon's much more solid defensively than Collins, so I understand that, and that's probably why Bud elected to stick with him in this game. Dedmon did not play well, and you can't really sugarcoat that. It was minus 11 in 30 minutes and just didn't give the Hawks much, and I thought it would have been the right move to go back to Collins. I will say, in regards to, there was a lot of chatter about not going back to Collins and sort of ahead of Muscala down the stretch. I will say, I've been saying this throughout the season so far, I will say this, it's just, Bud's been very hesitant to play the Dedmon-Collins combination, and I think, everything we've seen for 4 games now is that Bud is treating Collins like a center. I think he is a center long term. You can argue whether you think those guys should be playing together more, but I'm totally okay with Bud treating Collins as a center. I think he is a center long term, and I think he's better at center right now than he is a power forward. With that said, I do understand the impetus to try to maybe play what you could argue as your best 2 front court guys together in Collins and Dedmon in some ways, at least when Dedmon's playing well. I just didn't have a problem with that specifically, but I will say that, Collins was just better than Dedmon throughout the game in this spot. It wasn't like it was this neck and neck thing. Dedmon was bad, Collins was good for the most part here. I'm not quite as eager to anoint Collins as a better overall player right now today than Dedmon is, just because of all the safety that he brings defensively. But in this game, there was no question that Collins was the better player, and he's certainly much more dynamic offensively. A lot's been made, including by me, about Dedmon's jump shooting, and that's definitely a valuable weapon. But still, it's a pure catch and shoot thing. He's not going to be creating offense in the way that Collins certainly is capable of doing on the offensive end of the floor. As for Mike Muscala, the numbers are not awful in this game. 5 points, 4 rebounds, was a dead even plus minus. He and Collins had the same plus minus. 23 minutes, 2 of 5 from the floor, 1 of 2 from 3. I didn't think Mike was great here. I don't think he was as bad as some people wanted to tell me that he was on Twitter. Muscala, because I've defended him quite a bit at the time, I think I'm certainly higher than probably most people are on him. I think people want to tell me when they think he's being bad, and I understand. This is not a great Mike Muscala game by any stretch of the imagination. I think he was particularly good here, but I don't think he was awful either. That was kind of the disconnect there that I had with some of the fan base, even some people I trust. I mean, Tyler Jones, a friend of the program, has been on a couple of times, and I trust him immensely, has not been a fan of what Muscala's been doing in the early going, and I totally get it. He's not been playing that well. There are definitely some shortcomings there. His rebounding's not great, something he's never going to be great at. Some of his ball skills stuff has gotten some attention, but, has not been fantastic. So I think Muscala is better than the guy we've seen in the first 4 games. With that said, again, I don't think Greinke. He was terrible in this game. I thought he was just, not great. That's kind of the best way to put it. I didn't think he was bad, though, at least outright bad in this spot. I thought Deadman, comparatively to what the baselines were, Deadman was much worse than he normally would be, whereas Mescal was probably, it was a below average game for him, but it wasn't like he just fell off the map completely in this game. That kind of does it for the normal starters, at least his normal rotation guys in terms of the high-end guys. Malcolm Delaney, though, was the fifth starter in this game, played 33 minutes, although he did not play a ton down the stretch. Was 3 of 9 from the floor, 1 of 2 from three, had 10 points, 4 turnovers and 1 assist, 2 steals for Malcolm, had 5 fouls as well, was minus 16. That was a game worst number. This is not a good Malcolm Delaney performance, especially defensively in the first half, especially. I did not think he was very good defensively. That's been a concern of mine this year in the short sample that we have for Malcolm in 4 games, is that last year I was actually impressed with Delaney's defense versus what I thought it was going to be. I had some concerns about him coming over from Europe and even his time at Virginia Tech, where defensively he was never super locked in, but he actually impressed me a little bit last year, basically just being an average defender at point guard, which there's some value in that, but he was cooked up by Goran Dragic for a lot of the first half, and just was not a good defensive player in this game in general. Offensively, there was not a great performance either. 3 of 9 from the floor kind of speaks for itself. Delaney doesn't bring a ton of creation off the dribble just because it's not really his game. He's definitely more of a jump shooter, but if jump shots don't fall at some point, it's going to have to rectify itself. Delaney, I don't want to blame Delaney for that kind of performance here, because he's not a guy at this point in the NBA, and I think that's pretty clear that I'm higher on him than most. He should not be playing 33 minutes in an NBA game. That's sort of out of necessity when Dennis Schroeder's down in the lineup. I continue to think he's probably going to just be a fine-ish backup point guard, but he did not play well here, and there's no way around that. The expanded role did not treat him well. I talked about this yesterday on the podcast. I thought he might play better with a more expanded role, but did not come to fruition here. It's a one-game sample, so you don't want to make too big of a judgment on that, but this is not the Malcolm Delaney show by any stretch of the imagination. So sort of in total there with the starting five plus Collins, you got 3 subpar performances from Mescal, Deadman, and Delaney. You're not going to win on the road against a team with more talent than you are. If 3 of your starters in the game, 3 of your big minute guys do not play well, and that's exactly what happened with those guys in this game. Off the bench, aside from Collins, who we already talked about, Luke Babbitt had 9 points in 23 minutes, played a lot. I understand why. Without Elisova on the court, you need his offense. They went to Babbitt down the stretch a little bit for his punch as a scorer when the Hawks were trailing by 9 points in the final minutes. Didn't really have a lot. In fact, the Heat immediately scored on him when he came in the game late. But in general, if he makes shots, he's playable. And I didn't think he was great by any stretch. I'd like to see him take a little bit more of a workload offensively, at least to getting some shots up, because you need him to play. When he's playing, you need him to get a lot of shots up, because that's his primary value, of course. Defensively, he's not any great shakes, but for the most part, he can be hidden effectively. Isaiah Taylor, 13 minutes in his, it wasn't his debut. He did play for a few seconds in the game on Sunday, but this is sort of his debut with the Hawks. I was actually impressed with what I saw from Taylor in a small sample. He's very small, but 4 points, 2 assists, and 13 minutes. Made his only field goal attempt, made both of his free throws. He's very, very quick. His good vision, had a very, very nice pass off the dribble to create a layup in the fourth quarter, and I had no problem with him playing some extended minutes. I think he's a better player than Josh Majette. Majette might be safer in terms of just effectively running what Bud wants, because he knows the system better at this point, but Taylor, without a practice, was about as effective as you could possibly expect him to be. I think he's a much better prospect. He's just much younger, all that fun stuff. Majette now, by the way, as the Erie training camp opened on Monday, is now counting against his 45-day clock. So you would think as soon as Schroeder comes back, you can almost assume that Majette's going to be gone. And even with the way Taylor played tonight, I would not be stunned to see Bud and company and Travis Lang send him down to the to Erie to save some days now, just because there's no. Once you're going to play him in this game, he wasn't even the emergency guy. They played no point guard lineups, so they had 2 guys ahead of him plus the no PG lineups. And if you're not going to play him, there's no real reason to have him unless you have another injury. So would not blow me away to see him sent back down. Majette did some positive things, provide some stability there, and the fact that he's an emergency option. And I'm still totally fine with the 2-way contract investment in him, to pay him a little bit more, have him run your stuff in Erie, and have those guys look good as well. And you can always bring him back if you need him. You do have 45 days Only one of them counts today, so he still has 44 to go, and if they need him later in the year, they can certainly bring him back. Last but not least, Tyler Dorsey played 5 minutes. It was sort of his first real run as an NBA player in a competitive game. He's gotten some garbage time, but at the same time here, he didn't really do much, did not attempt a shot in 5 minutes, was pretty much anonymous out there. His defense, though, not great, as you might imagine with Tyler Dorsey. He's not really ready to play NBA defense at this point, and that's probably the reason why he isn't playing, although he did play and Nick Prisino did not in this game, so that kind of tells you a little bit about where Bud is, especially with the inactive list. I think Dorsey seems to be ahead of Prisino in the pecking order. I think Prisino is actually a higher upside prospect, but Travis Schlenk did invest some resources in those guys in the offseason, and we'll see if they ever get to play a little bit more, and if they don't, would not be a surprise at all to see those guys head down to Erie for a little bit of time in the near future once Erie starts playing some actual games. Lastly, Marco Bellinelli, only guy we haven't talked about just yet. 27 minutes for Marco off the bench, had 11 points, was a +3 in the game. He actually was the only positive member of the Hawks in an 11-point loss. Was 5 of 9 from the floor, 1 of 3 from 3, and yeah, in general, played well. You know, it's one of those things where you're going to take the highs and the lows from Bellinelli, but I thought he was pretty good here, and you can't really argue with what he did. From a team-based perspective, I talked about a lot about individual guys here. You know, Bud played 10 guys. The offense was not good. That's kind of the moral of the story here. A 94.1 offensive rating, 20 turnovers, you know, 7 from Prince is something that, you know, we mentioned in his section, but it's kind of untenable. Delaney had 4, Muscala had 3, Bellinelli had 3, but just 20 is too much in a game where you don't have a lot of scoring punch. You need to be able to take care of the ball, and they just were not able to do that. I will say, though, defensively, they actually played, I thought, the best game of the four to this point, which is, again, not a huge shock considering Schroeder's defensive issues. You know, not that I'm going to tell you that Isaiah Taylor is going to be some lockdown guy, but Delaney, you know, for as bad as Delaney was in terms of his baseline defensively in this game, I thought last year he was a better defensive player than Dennis Schroeder was. You know, you can kind of speak to that tonight. Just not having Dennis out there is not the only reason why the team was better defensively by any stretch of the imagination, but the defense was better here. You know, Miami is not this awesome offensive team, but they do have some talent. Josh Richardson had a very nice game for them with 21 points. But, you know, a 105.3 defensive rating is not any great shakes, but considering all the issues that they've had, it was not awful either. One final note before I let you guys get out of here on this fine Monday into Tuesday is that the Heat attempted 20 more threes than the Hawks did, 37 attempts for Miami, 17 for Atlanta. You know, it's not the end-all be-all, but I do think that this particular Hawks team is going to have to take more threes. That's sort of the way around. That's sort of the easiest way to put it. You know, in this game, it's tough to generate threes, at least open threes, when you don't really have a guy off the dribble that can kind of break the defense down. That's not a shot at Malcolm Delaney. It's just not that. It's not really his game. And then aside from Collins collapsing defensive in his limited time, you don't really have that kind of you know, defense breaking option. And, you know, you're in terms of high end passers, you don't really have those guys either. So that really hurts you being able to generate open threes. You know, they made 7 of 17. That's 41% from three. That's not a bad thing at all, obviously, but you need the Hawks to take more threes, especially if they're going to allow. And listen, they have been allowing a ton of 3-point attempts. That's been a thing that's been sort of plaguing this defense for a while now. You know, they were able to hide it in the past with all the talent that they had and, you know, the presence of Paul Millsap. And listen, Mike Budenholzer does a great job defensively for the most part, but allowing 20 more threes than you attempt is not going to be sustainable for this team if they want to win some games this year. You know, 1-3 at this point in time, not a big surprise. I think if you were to tell me that they were 1-3, I would have expected them to beat Brooklyn and lose the opener, but they sort of flipped those. This is the toughest spot that the Hawks have had to this point. Even before Schroeder went out, even before Schroeder went down, I would have told you that this Miami game on the second night of a back-to-back on the road, they're the best team that the Hawks have played against so far in the season. So yeah, there's that. I mean, it's not a big surprise they lost this game. I will say, though, the next contest is going to be in Chicago on Thursday. I posed this question, and I kind of just going to say it out loud here. If Dennis Schroeder is not able to return for that game on Thursday, and that's very much in the air at this point in time, I'm really not sure who's favored in the game between the Schroederless Hawks and the Chicago Bulls on the road, because the Bulls are the worst team in the league by a sizable margin. Yes, I know what's been happening in Phoenix, but the Suns have a lot more talent than the Bulls do, so I think I will be on record as saying the Bulls are the worst team in the league. But, you know, if the Hawks don't have Schroeder, they probably are as bad. And then the game is in Chicago. So, you know, it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. But that was sort of the one most likely win that a lot of Hawks fans were penciling in on this road trip. Of course, the Hawks already got a win, so that's nice. You know, and going 1-4 wouldn't be the worst thing in the world when it comes to my visions of ping pong balls. But, you know, that's a game that the Hawks, if they want to win games, could certainly use. You can't really go out loose to the Bulls when you're trying to secure some wins. So just file that one away for the future. Obviously, we're going to talk about that game and much, much more later in the week. I appreciate everybody listening to the podcast. You know, it was not a super fun game here, but at least got to evaluate some guys. And, you know, it starts to settle in with some frustration. I know a lot of Hawks fans are getting upset, especially, you know, at least in my mentions, it was a lot of Delaney and Muscala hate. I do think that the hate's gone too far, Mike Muscala especially, and Delaney, yes, this is not new. Even when he was playing well, in my estimation, last year, a lot of Hawks fans don't really appreciate what he brings to the table. But in general, this is a tough game to watch on a number of levels, and especially when your prized rookie is playing extremely well and then not playing down the stretch, that can be certainly frustrating for a team that, you know, not that fans don't understand, because a lot of fans do understand that losing games this year is probably not the worst thing in the world. It's just one of those things where in the moment you're watching a game and you don't think your best five is on the court, and that can be very frustrating. So I understand your pain on that, everybody, I promise. And I'm trying to keep a level head. If you're a new listener, I probably tend to be lower on the high moments and higher on the low moments than most people do. I'm not a sky is falling guy. I'm also not a jump out of my seat with excitement guy. So that's kind of my role, I think, on the pod. So try to give you guys a little bit of perspective. Take some of the emotion out of things, and that generally means that it's more in the middle than the highs and lows. So just file that away from some perspective as to how you evaluate my thoughts, if that makes any sense at all. And with that said, thanks for listening, everybody. I appreciate it. As always, subscribe to the pod, do all that fun stuff, and we will see you guys tomorrow.
What you doing?
Ran out of space on my phone, so I'm deleting some stuff. Bye, singing dog. Bye, goal.
I pronounce you.
Bye, wedding ceremony.
Stop. At Metro PCS, you get 2 free phones with twice as much memory.
Really?
Don't say bye to your memories. Switch to Metro PCS and get 2 free LG K20 Plus phones with 32 gigs when you switch 2 lines. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. See store for details and terms and conditions.